Ticket City presents Why You Go to the Game to see the Tide roll.
You know, we knew they were going to make it. And out of nowhere, number 95, Thomas Raham, blocks that kick. And I mean, I can still hear the sound, the two thumps. One was the kick, and the one was his hand blocking that kick. And of course, the Alabama fans went crazy.
Put yourself in the action with Ticket City. Visit Tidesports.com and click tickets.
The Bama Beat. From the sports desk of the Tuscaloosa News and Tidesports.com. Now, the Bama Beat Podcast.
This podcast is brought to you by Mobley & Sons. I actually stopped in Mobley & Sons just a few weeks ago, have some alterations done. They were great, really helpful, had a great time in there. Mobley & Sons has an unmatched selection of men's clothing combined with superior customer service. They've served as a fine men's clothier since 1969. Go check them out. They'll get you looking good for the big game. Welcome back to the Bama Beat. I'm Ben Jones. We're here with Taryn Walk. You've had a little bit of a break from the podcast, haven't you?
You're welcome, everyone.
Where have you been? We've missed you.
I don't know. Where have I been?
You've been here.
I've been here. I did my own podcast.
Yes, she has. You can go listen to That's Just Walk. Or is it that's So Walk. I'm sorry.
That's Just Whack. That's just whack. I don't know.
Don't let her pronounce your own last name.
No, not anymore. I feel like it doesn't make sense if I say That's Just Walk. You have to like see it. So it looks like That's Just Whack.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know where I've been.
Yeah.
Gymnastics.
Doing gymnastics.
A race. Yeah. A NASCAR race.
NASCAR race. You were over at Talladega a couple times, I think, mm-hmm. since we talked to you last. Also, you were at spring football on Friday.
Yeah, right? That's how it was. Unfortunately, that is back.
Taryn and I are recording this podcast on Monday, March 11th. We're doing it right after Cecil and I record the basketball podcast, which you guys may or may not have listened to.
Which you should have listened to.
You should have listened to. Perhaps depends on your pain tolerance a little bit, how many more basketball podcasts you want to listen to this year. But if you can make it, there's not going to be that many more basketball podcasts, presumably. So go listen to that one. Yeah. In any event, spring football.
That was Friday.
Yes, that was Friday. This is probably Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday as you're listening to this podcast. Alabama had one spring football practice on Friday afternoon.
And then we have a week off.
Yeah. We don't have a week off.
No, we don't. We really don't.
Yeah.
I know that for sure.
The players do have a week off because it is spring break. So Alabama's 15 spring practices are going to be divided. They had the first one that was before spring break. Then they have about 10 days. You know, there's the week, but also the weekends on the end of it before they come back. And their next practice will be on Monday, March 18th,
yes.
unless I'm mistaken.
Nope, that is correct.
Yeah. Working all the way out to A-Day, there will be 14 practices, including the A-Day game once they get back. The NCAA mandated 15 practices in spring, of course. That's what you've got to look forward to. So we'll have real actual football to talk about over the next few weeks. At this point, only seen one practice, only seen about 10 minutes of Alabama football. So we can just go ahead and start off with this. What's the point of spring practice, Taryn?
I don't know. To have an A-Day where everyone can show up.
You knew
for
this question was coming.
I know. The point of A-Day, I mean, the point of spring practice is to, I mean, half the team isn't here, so it's kind of to get the veterans back into the groove of things and reality check that the summer's coming. That means summer camp's coming. That means fall camp's coming. That means season's coming. It's like a domino effect, and they can't just go numb all spring and expect to hop right back into it. And I think this is a good time in the school year for the people who are on campus to kind of mesh together already, since how many recruits are coming in later summer?
I believe there's 15 early enrollees and somewhere in the neighborhood of like 10 to 12
yeah.
who will be getting here later on.
A little more than half the start of the
summer or midway through the summer. So more than half the roster is here, but only about half the recruiting class is here overall. The big key that I've always heard about spring practice is that it's a time to really emphasize the fundamentals. Because you don't have any game planning, you're not installing a certain package of plays every week. Certainly you're installing what the base of your offense and defense will be, but you're not breaking down film of your opponents during spring. You're not worried about that. Mm-hmm. You're worried about self-scouting and self-improvement a lot more than that. You're kind of setting the foundation and some of the habits that you're hoping will just become second nature throughout the season. If you get into the season and you're having to reinforce that stuff and teach some of the basics over and over again that you do during spring football and during the first couple weeks of fall camp, then you're going to be behind. Then you won't have as much time for game planning and preparation and stuff like that. So that's one very important thing that needs to be covered during spring practice.
Spring practice is a lot like gymnastics because all they focus about ever is on self-improvement because you can't game plan for the opponent. So that's how I'm thinking of this, actually. And the two seasons overlap, spring season and gymnastics season. So it's all about the fundamentals and the basics and doing the little things. And I can quote 100 things that the other team says.
We could continue to just talk about coaching cliches on this podcast for the next 20 minutes or so, but we're not going to do that. We'll talk about some other things that are important for Alabama.
We should do that one day, though.
Oh, gosh.
That would be so entertaining.
Could we keep it going?
We could get
that
a little
long?
In trouble, though. We might, because it gets a little mocking.
I don't think we'd get in trouble, but I just don't think anyone would want to listen to it.
I think they would.
Hmm.
Let us know if you want to hear us mock all the coaching cliches.
We would need like a script to be able to
keep
that bit going for 20 or 30 minutes.
I could do it.
In any event, there are some other things that are a little bit more specific than just fundamentals or basics or techniques that Alabama should probably be trying to work out or take a closer look at during spring practice. And we're going to talk about a few of those. One of the obvious ones, I think, We can just start with this because Nick Saban started with it on Friday. He mentioned the Alabama factor as being one of their goals that they're trying to get back. I think one of the interesting things that I've seen, having covered this program now for 4 seasons and having seen different off-seasons where they won a national championship, off-seasons where they lost a national championship.
No other option.
I mean, that's also the same for every other college football program. It's just some of them, you know, have only ever not won a national championship. Is the difference in motivation or the difference in messaging going into spring? Remember after the 2016 season, a lot of what you heard at the start of the 2017 season was don't waste a loss. And now what you're hearing is the Alabama factor.
Because those are two completely different losses, too.
Yeah. I mean, also, I just think that the program tends to be in a little bit of a different place. And also, it's difficult to use the exact same message just 2 years apart. There would be so many players on the roster this year who just heard that message a couple of years ago. I don't know if it's going to resonate if you just stick with the exact same thing that you used the last time you won the national championship.
That's true.
I think one of the interesting things about this, though, talking about the Alabama factor, is that it's a little bit of a public acknowledgement that we probably haven't heard that much before, that
they didn't play that well last year.
No, it's a public acknowledgement that there's an intimidation factor of playing Alabama and that there are some teams that get beat, you know, before the whistle, before the coin flip, when they're out there during stretches and you look across the field and you see these guys who all weigh 20, 30 pounds more than you and all run 1/10 of a second faster than you. And you just know that you're beat before the game even starts. I don't know if that's something that they talk about, at least publicly in the program, all that much.
No, because otherwise it's always, we take every single opponent the exact same. It's a faceless opponent. Every game's the most important. Like, just because we're Alabama and they're some FCS team, like, you still take them just as serious. And this kind of defuncts all that.
Yeah.
And it's like, just kidding. Like, we know we're better than X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of that. But then I also think it's Saban acknowledging that last season, the team didn't play so much so to the standard it wanted.
Right, and I think that's a big part of it as well.
I think there's a difference between the Alabama standard and Alabama factor, though. The factor's toward the opponent, and the standard is internally.
That's a good way of putting it.
Thanks.
Yeah,
it's been bugging me like since Saban said factor.
So what do you think? Is he talking? He said factor.
When he says factor, I think it's just...
Is he talking about the standard? Or is he talking about the factor when he says factor?
I think he's talking about both.
Okay.
I do. But I think they're different things.
Yeah.
When he's saying factor, he's thinking... Because when he talks about it, he's talking about the internal, like, everyone holding each other accountable, showing up to work every single day. So I feel like that's more internal. But then also, he did go on to say, like, the Alabama factor has also gotten us to win XYZ, like, all these accomplishments. So I think for him, he's thinking both and just didn't want to use three words, factor and standard.
Yeah, you know, he has talked a little bit before. If you go all the way back even to his introductory press conference in 2007, he said that he wanted to build a program where opposing teams say, I hate playing these guys.
Mm-hmm. That's factor, not standard.
That, I think, was referring more to how Alabama played the game as opposed to just Alabama being Alabama. That was referring to talking about guys who are playing physical, guys who don't take plays off, guys who are going to keep pushing even when they have an advantage and just try and dominate their opponent. They've talked about that a little bit before, although I think like we've mentioned, it's a little bit different now the way that they're mentioning it. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's because over the last 12 years now, I guess, the way that Alabama has played has just become so synonymous with, you know, what the program is, yeah, that those two things have kind of melded together. I think that's kind of an interesting thing to consider as well, that they were so good at it for so long that that just became what the program was, and you didn't feel like that's what it was last season for the first time in a very long time.
Yeah, like it was the standard, and it's what they were so used to, that anything else would have been like, hold on, what's going on? Even if like that standard was so high. Yeah. And so I think since last year, it's not that the team was bad last year. Obviously not. It went all the way to the national championship.
They were pretty dominant and for a pretty healthy portion of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then if you like look at that final game, I don't want to say it looked like they gave up.
No, they didn't. I wouldn't say that.
But it didn't look like they usually do.
Yeah, and I do think one important distinction that we need to make if we're talking about the Alabama factor is that I don't think the Alabama factor particularly applies to Clemson. We're getting on a little bit of a detour here, going back to talking about the national championship game, and we'll circle back very quickly and get to spring practice. But I think that probably going back to the first national championship meeting between these programs at the end of the 2015 season, I've never gotten the sense that Clemson players felt like they were out of their depth in playing against Alabama.
Except for when Dabo said, like, little old Clemson. I was like, well, you're not little old anymore.
Yeah, that's Dabo being Dabo. What I'm referring to mainly is if you go and look at the 2015 national championship game, Alabama played really well in that game, deserved to win. There were also a fair amount of mistakes on Clemson's part. You know, there were two big coverage busts that let O.J. Howard wide open.
Mm-hmm.
There was a kickoff return for a national champion for a touchdown rather. Yeah. It was basically for a national championship.
Basically a national championship.
There was an onside kick. That was not a game necessarily where Alabama just lined up and
dominated,
ground Clemson down. Yeah. I remember talking to some of the Clemson players before the national championship game the next year in Tampa, and they said, you know, yeah, coming out of that game, we felt like we were good enough to win and we just made too many mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Alabama probably felt the same way coming out of 2016. Alabama, I think, was good enough to win that national championship and just didn't make enough plays down there in Tampa to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last year out there in the Bay Area, Alabama made a fair amount of mistakes in that game, and Clemson was good enough to take advantage of every single one of them.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I don't think that Clemson has that factor when they step on the field where they just feel like they can't match up against Alabama, because they've been able to do it for the most part for the last 4 years. They haven't been overwhelmed by Alabama in any of those games. It's not the same as, say, a program like LSU. You know, there were times, you know, even during last year's game down there at Baton Rouge, where you felt like as soon as Alabama got the momentum in that game, LSU just kind of felt like, oh, here we go again, you know. And you might see that with some of the other programs that Alabama plays as well. You know, they get beat as soon as the score is 7-0.
Yeah. I don't want to say, because it's not that LSU isn't a good program, but I feel like Clemson has established itself as between Alabama and Clemson, it's back and forth, top two. Like, even though it wasn't Alabama-Clemson last year in the national championship, it was Alabama-Georgia, Clemson was in the top four.
Yeah, in the college football playoff and the Sugar Bowl.
I feel like anyone in that top four, screw the factors, screw the dominance, like, all bets are off.
Well, I wonder.
Because then I'm looking at Notre Dame thinking, never mind.
I wonder if Alabama were to meet Georgia again, if Georgia would have this feeling of like impending doom. If they would feel like, you know.
Only if there's a backup quarterback that's going to come in.
You know, if Georgia.
That's what's so great.
If Georgia plays Alabama this year, are they going to feel like, you know, we had them dead to rights twice in a row, we're better than them, we can win this game? Or are they going to feel like, oh no, we've lost this game twice in a row, something bad is going to happen again? Because that's really what the Alabama factor
Talia's
is.
Talia's going to come in this time instead of Tua or Jalen.
You got to prepare for both Tagovailoas in this game. God. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how Georgia feels. I shouldn't laugh at this. But it's just like, I wasn't even there for the second one. And just to hear and watch how it all unfolded, I was like, this is literally a national championship. But yeah. Tua and Jalen have switched spots. Like, that sucks.
Yeah. I wasn't in the Georgia locker room postgame because I had to go and get the Alabama locker room. One of our colleagues, the Athens Banner Herald, Mark Weiser, sent me a quote from, I think it was DeAndre Baker, mm-hmm. Georgia's star cornerback, after the game. His quote was, same story as last year. Backup quarterback came in and we couldn't adjust.
It's just so funny. Like, how could you not game plan for that? We got such a tangent. We can go back.
No, I don't think it's really that much of a tangent because we've been talking about the Alabama factor and how important that is to try and regain in this offseason the whole time. I think when you talk about where that starts from and how Alabama goes about regaining that, I think one of the important things that we need to talk about is the changes in the coaching staff.
Yeah.
I don't know if the coaching staff last year didn't have that factor. Maybe it was the players. Maybe it was something that didn't trickle down from coaches to players. But it's fair to point out there's a lot of new coaches on the staff this year. And I think that Alabama, Nick Saban, will be hoping that they can deliver the message and they're hoping that the message gets through this year in a way that it maybe didn't get through last year.
I feel like last year...
That was harder for me to say than it should have been.
It happens. It's a Monday. I feel like last year's coaches also were just so young. And a lot of them might be this year, too. I don't know their ages. But, like, I feel like that was such a common topic where everyone was saying, like, oh, like, since he's, like, close to our age, we bond a lot more. And I don't know if that changed the dynamic of how they were coached. Maybe, like, now with more experienced coaches, older coaches, and ones who plan to stick around. Or I think that was the goal for them this year, at least. We'll see how that plays out. But that is where they can rely on the history more and be like, hey, like, this is how it's going to go. This is what we're doing. And you have no say in the matter. Like, I'm the coach. We need to set the standard back and get back this factor.
Yeah.
You know, if that makes sense.
The one coach who's really returning to the staff who'd been a part of the program for a significant period of time before that was Sal Cinceri.
Oh, no. I thought you were going to say Sark.
No.
I got super excited.
No. You know, Steve Sarkisian obviously had been a part of the program in 2016, mainly as a consultant.
And,
and then spent a week or a month, depending on how you want to add it up, as the offensive coordinator. I don't know if you would say that he's intimately familiar with everything. Maybe he is. Maybe he's not. I don't know. I think Sal Cinceri is at a different level, obviously, as a guy who spent multiple years here with the program. The other assistants have not had ties to the program, guys like Charles Huff, Holman Wiggins, Charles Kelly. But for the most part, they are a little bit older, a little bit more experienced than some of the guys that moved on to other programs.
They have a bigger, deeper resume, and I think that's going to factor in a lot.
Yeah.
I got to stop saying factor.
Factor?
Yeah, the Alabama factor is going to factor back in. I only said it twice, but... It's
what if we just renamed the podcast the Alabama factor?
No, let's not. Because then I got to rebrand the whole thing.
Taryn runs the website, so...
Like, no, we're not doing that. Yeah. We have to go back and change it to every single episode.
No,
the Alabama factor 1, 2, 3.
No.
I would be turning in my resignation.
No. Would you really quit over that?
For 144 episodes? Yes.
Oh, we're at way more than 144.
Exactly.
We're at almost 200 now.
Okay. You're just proving my point.
I think for the most part, if we're talking about trying to regain the Alabama factor, I think really what you're looking at is the defense. I don't think anyone would say that the Alabama offense last year didn't play up to snuff.
No.
Maybe you would have preferred to see the running game be a little bit more physical all last year at times, although Nick
you
Saban,
have Tua as a quarterback. Everyone can shut up who says that.
Nick Saban got questions last year about the offensive line in the running game and made the point that, look, when you have an offense that's built like this one, that's going to pass the ball, that's going to do a lot of RPOs, you can't just all of a sudden flip a switch and be able to run the ball 12 straight times like you did with Derrick Henry in 2015. It's just a different thing. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that you might have seen with the way that the offensive line was built last year. You had Matt Womack, who was on the bench last year. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're trying to build the most physical offensive line possible, then maybe you would have had him there in your top five.
Yeah, but just I think an idea. The defense is the big thing. Because I feel like that's the Alabama factor.
Yeah.
And, right there alone. Because you never were like, oh, that offense was fantastic. Not that you would never say that, but like it wasn't like, holy crap, that defense.
Yeah. And if you look at the numbers for the defense last year, obviously some of them are skewed because you give up 44 points in the last game of the season. But really, even before that, I think there was a sense that it wasn't quite the dominant unit top to bottom like you'd seen for years and years before.
No, and they were asked about that constantly.
Yeah.
Which was fair questions.
And I think they're probably going to get more questions about it this year as well.
Like, hey, bro, you back?
Yeah. it'll be interesting to see if they can get back to that point, particularly considering you're losing guys like Mack Wilson, like Deontay Thompson,
Quinnen
Williams. Yeah, I'm considering Quinnen more Williams. The underclassmen because I think part of the Alabama factor or what contributed to Alabama being able to be so dominant was the ability of Nick Saban to convince some of these guys to come back for one more year and say, look, right now you're a second-round pick, you're a third-round pick. If you come back one more year, you're going to be better than that. If you come back one more year, you're going to help us. And you're going to help yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those guys, you know, no need for Quinnen Williams to come back. I don't think that any of us watched the NFL Combine and thought about like, oh, you know, he really needed one more year in Tuscaloosa, you guys. You know,
yeah.
305 pounds get, running a 4.8 40.
Got to get some more messy fries. Yeah. 310.
But overall, Alabama's defense last year was not the dominant unit that it had been before, and a fair number of those guys aren't going to be back this year.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how they can fill some of those spots and how some of the returning guys can progress.
Mm-hmm. It's weird because you don't think last year's unit was bad. It just something was missing. Maybe that overall dominant feeling, maybe. I don't know. But I think that's something that they're going to want to get back this year because I don't think the offense is going to have any issue. I feel like everyone important on the offense returned. Not to say those who left aren't important, but like, hey, Tua's here. So the big ones here, along with Jerry and Devontae and Henry. Like,
yeah.
You got your horses there. 22. Najee Harris is here. You got some returning.
Taryn's turning into a coach where she doesn't know names. She just knows numbers.
I was like, oh my God. It's also, I don't know why Mondays are off today. Normally I'm okay with Mondays, but I didn't sleep well.
I do wonder if the Alabama offense next year can contribute to the Alabama factor. Although I think if you're going to do that, then I think you have to.
I 100% think it's the defense.
Oh, well, I think if you're scoring 65 points a game, that's going to demoralize some teams.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you're going to do that, then you're going to have to operate in a way that Nick Saban hasn't really operated at Alabama. You're going to have to run the score up on some teams. You're going to have to leave
Tua Tagovailoa
in for the fourth quarter of some of these games, which he didn't do at all last year. You know,
he didn't play the fourth quarter until what? The national championship?
LSU, really, I think. Right?
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So I wonder if that can be a piece of this or if that's not going to end up being, if it's really all on the defense and on special teams.
Nah, special teams. We don't want Alabama factor for special teams because that Alabama factor is not a good factor. I don't know. It's just the defense. The defense, the defense, the defense. Like, they're not, I don't think Saban's going to change his way and be running up the score on people. A, he wants to be protective of the quarterback and the starters. It's a long season, especially when they run through the postseason every year. So I think an important thing will be shutting down offenses. I mean, obviously the offense last year blew up defenses, and now it's like they got to do vice versa on defense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thoughts are like swimming, and they're not coming out as I want.
I'm probably going to have to take some time and do some research and figure out when the last time was that Alabama lost this much production off of defense. You know, going from 2017 to 2018, they had to replace the entire secondary, more or less.
Yeah.
It was not an insignificant process of rebuilding defense last year. It's just a matter of when you have as much talent as Alabama has, you're going to have to do that more years than not. You're going to have guys who are ready to go to the NFL. You're going to have guys who are waiting and don't become starters until their junior and senior year.
Yeah.
So,
who are the big returners on defense this year?
This year?
Yeah.
Raekwon Davis is
he's
probably.
That's about all I got.
He is the biggest returning defensive player in many, many ways.
Just ever.
You know, Raekwon is a guy who probably would have ended up being a second or third round pick had he come out and was able to come back for this year. Partially because, as you saw watching the NFL Combine, there were so many good defensive linemen last year that it was just going to be such a deep group that it was not going to be best for him to come out after a year where he probably didn't play quite as well as some people expected.
Raekwon, like, didn't jump out last season.
No, his production was down from his sophomore season.
His sophomore year, I feel like we were like, holy crap, that man just killed someone. And that last year, it was like, there he is.
Dylan Moses, I think, is going to enter the year getting some All-American hype. I would assume that he would have a very good chance of being one of Alabama's players in Hoover at SEC Media Days. Terrell Lewis hasn't played a ton because of health issues, obviously. But he's a guy who's always been talked about as being a potential first-round pick. And some people thought he might have had the chance to go pro this year. He wouldn't have been a first-round pick if he'd come out after barely playing for two years. But I think he probably would have been drafted based on his physical ability. Anthony Jennings also could have gone pro. Probably played his best football down the stretch. You know, Trevon Diggs, I think, was off to a good start last season at cornerback before his broken foot. Patrick Surtain.
PS2, yeah.
Yeah. Going to be here for his sophomore year. Not a dominant corner necessarily, but by the end of the season was certainly Alabama's best cornerback.
Right.
And I think that pairing Trevon Diggs and Patrick Surtain at corner is going to be really interesting because those are two big, long, rangy, athletic guys at corner, which most teams won't have. Xavier McKinney is going to be going into his junior year, and he'll be another guy that you'll have to keep an eye on that might end up going pro a year early.
Good. I enjoy talking to him.
Yeah. Xavier McKinney, Dylan Moses could both go pro after the 2019 season, just depending on how it goes, if we're looking forward to that.
I feel like all these guys,
Terrell Lewis would have a year of eligibility left if he chose to go pro.
I feel like all these guys, especially those who weren't able to contribute as much as they would have liked to last year, need to come in with like a fire lit underneath their butt.
Yeah, that's a good point that a lot of the guys that they're going to be counting on for the biggest roles on defense, like Diggs and like Lewis, were guys who didn't get to play a ton last year or weren't on the field.
They have to have a chip on their shoulder to get this factor thing back.
Yeah.
Like, I think they were all quiet last year because a lot of them were out, but they got to come in here and set the standard. Be like, hey, I didn't get to do this last year, and it wasn't the way we wanted it to be, so now I'm going to set this year the way I want it to be, you know?
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. I think they got to step up in a big way. But that is also a good point as to bringing this full circle, why spring is important. Those who didn't play as much as they would have liked to last year, it'd be dangerous for them to jump right into the fourth quarter training in the summer or like summer camp and then fall camp. Like spring is kind of like testing the waters and like, hey, can my legs still do the things it used to do or things like that? I don't really know. I've never broken a bone. So,
yeah. We try.
And they do it so casually.
We try to set a standard with this podcast. And we think that you guys enjoy listening to it.
If we have the Tuscaloosa News Factor, the Tide Sports Factor.
If you've made it 28 minutes into this podcast, we appreciate you. We're going to continue to try and do podcasts like this that we hope that you will continue to appreciate. And if you do, if you think we have a standard, maybe a 5-star standard, then you can leave us a 5-star review.
I'll take 4
iTunes
at this point.
No.
Okay, 5.
Hashtag 5 stars only.
Okay.
We want our reviews on iTunes to hopefully look like your NCAA football dynasty recruiting classes. All you guys who used to play that on PlayStation or Xbox know exactly what I'm talking about, where you would sign...
It's going to be a no for me.
You'd sign 22 5-star players every year or something. In any event...
I can't contribute.
You guys have
that.
Done a good job of leaving us ratings and reviews lately.
Keep it up.
Yeah. If we could get to maybe like 100 by the time we get to the end of spring football? Man, that'd be great.
What are we at?
Last I checked was at 60.
All right. I'm going to go make a bunch of iTunes accounts.
Just kidding. It's called vote manipulation.
So?
Anyway, thanks for listening, you guys. We're going to be back later on this week with another podcast talking about the road to Nick Saban.
Y'all are doing a great job with that.
Yeah, I think that's the podcast talking about the Bill Curry era. So,
Curry.
Yeah.
Like the food.
Taryn likes Thai food. Alabama fans don't like Bill Curry. But in any event, thanks for listening, everybody. Until next time, this is the Bama Beat.